Welcome to another episode of Living Your Sparked Second Half. Today's guest is Amy Lang. Amy is the CEO of Moxie Club and the host of Happy and Healthy with Amy podcast. She specializes in working with your brain and body to create joyful eating and deep health. I enjoyed this conversation so much. We have so much in common, Amy and I. First of all, we're in the same mastermind. So I met her in person recently, and I'm so thankful for in-person events returning because I am such a connector. I'm like a people person, and I like to hug people in person and have these in-person conversations. And she is so bubbly, and she has a background very similar to mine where we were in the corporate world. And then as we got older, we built businesses online. She had a offline business before she got online, but we'll get into that. I don't want to steal her thunder, but she did have a very similar corporate job and then bought her own business off on a brick and mortar business. So anyways, without further ado, here's my conversation with Amy. And she also had me on her podcast. So that'll be, I think, airing not till January, but I'll let you know when it airs. And we had a great conversation. She pulled some stuff out of me that I don't think I've talked about on other episodes where I've been a guest on other podcasts. But yeah, it was a really great conversation. I think it went like an hour. So couldn't shut me up. But anyways, yeah. So here is Amy and her story.
Hi, I'm Lori Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place for women in their second half of life to go to receive inspiration. If you are at a place where you believe your best days are behind you, it is my hope one of these episodes will spark you to think differently and lead you to a new belief that your second half may actually be your best half. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that the younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age or circumstances hold you back from the pursuit of a more fulfilling and fun life. The happier we are, the better the world will be. So instead of settling for what you don't want, how about going after what you do want? Listen in and let something you hear prompt you to take the first step in making the rest your best.
Here we are with another guest, and I'm very excited to talk to Amy. Amy Lang. We recently were together at a retreat. We have the same coach. And she came up to me so bubbly and introduced herself. And I'm so grateful that she did that because we connected. We have very similar energy. And I just am so thankful that you introduced yourself, Amy. So welcome to the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this conversation that we're having today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am very curious. I just want to start out by talking to you about your moniker. And I guess that's your IG handle on Instagram. Habit Whisperer. And because I just had a horse whisperer on the show. And so she's a horse whisperer. You're a habit whisperer. So yes, a little bit different, but I think that's such a cool thing. Kind of like I came up with Not Your Average Grandma. And I'm sure this kind of was inspired by maybe a personal journey you had. So Can you give me a little background on how that came about?
Oh, well, I think, so I'll back up a little bit.
Sure.
I came from high tech and I left that world, became a health club owner. You can imagine every person that I ran into was talking about wanting to develop better habits, get fit, lose weight, get in shape. I mean, whatever you want to call it. And I believe that to create the life we want, so much of it comes from habits. Especially when I worked with so many clients that wanted to lose weight, and it was always the lure of the diet. And I was like, could we just put that on hold and focus our energy on creating self-care habits and see what happens from there? I think in business, it's the same thing. It's folks want that quick fix. It's the same idea. And if we focus our energies on creating habits, we get the consistency, and it's through that, if we're lining up everything properly that we end up seeing the results that we want. Maybe better, maybe a little short, but at least we're going in the right direction. And so Habit Whisperer really came from my studying what worked, and a byproduct is what doesn't work, to actually then be able to form habits. And I don't put a lot of energy into breaking old habits. I actually spend like, oh, you have a current habit. How can we use what's already in place to make it what you want it to look like?
That's great. So, yeah. People are probably more resistant, or they feel like it's a big burden or obstacle that you're pushing up the hill to try to change an old habit, versus if they think we can work with what we have, that is more amenable, I think, to people. So can you give an example of a habit that you would say to somebody, let's see how we can make this work for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the strategies people like to use is habit stacking. That's a very common one. So if someone wants to say, drink more water, I will say, well, do you drink coffee in the morning? I think a pretty large percentage of my clients drink water. And so I'll be like, well,
or drink coffee. Drink coffee.
Yeah. Would you like to drink more water? And they say, yes. I'm like, well, when is the first sip of water you have? And a lot of people, they're like, oh, maybe lunchtime or when I get to work or something. And I'm like, how about if you have a glass of water with your coffee in the morning? You already have an existing habit. Can I sneak something else into your routine? That would be an example. A lot of the work that I do is actually identifying which habits it is that they want to put in place. And especially with someone who's done a lot of chronic dieting, which is a lot of my audience, one of the things I notice is that they usually don't get enough fruits and vegetables in their normal everyday diet. And that I just mean not to lose weight, but just what they normally eat. And so part of it is even just having that conversation about, okay, how did you end up with the habits that you have right now? And so we have the same coach. I do a lot of thought work with them to uncover like what's the process going on that's keeping you from actually doing the things that you want to do. So many people will start the conversation with, well, I know I'm supposed to be doing this or I should do this and it's just not happening. And so we unpack that and figure out why. And that's where the whisperer comes in I heard you say this and I heard you say this. And they're kind of in conflict. What do we do about that? Which one's going to win?
Yeah. And I think a whisperer, the talent of a whisperer, which I'm sure you have, is what your intuition is telling you. It's like what they're not saying, because you can read between the tea leaves or whatever they say, right?
Well, sometimes I don't even think they're once they say it out loud, I get to hear the thought that's been going in their head over and over again. They've gotten so used to hearing it and not challenging the thought. Whereas I will say, you said that. What does that mean? Like, tell me more about this thought. So we start really exploring, and it's almost like that thread that you keep pulling on to figure out, well, where does this lead us? And a lot of times that might be the unsaid thought that's still running around in their head.
Yeah.
I picked up on like it poking out maybe.
Yeah. I it's funny because I work, with people's thoughts as well. But I had and a lot of my students also have, as we've aged, we've gained weight. And so I'm guessing that you probably do some work on identity, right? And how they see themselves or perceive themselves. Because I have a student that she was so caught up in this identity of being an Italian.
Okay.
And so, and Italians eat a lot. Mm-hmm. And Italians eat really good food that is high in calories. And these are all the things that she was saying to justify who she, and it's all really a role or identity she's taken on. It's not really her. It's something you can change. And once she realized and could hear herself, what she could change, she's like a different person now. It's like so amazing. So that whole thing with what you're thinking about like who you are is so part of that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, from what I know of the Italians that I know, it's like, it's a sin to be hungry.
And that's a big family. It's a whole like social thing around the eating.
Right. Right. And so there's a lot of culture around food. And I think every culture has its kind of rules around food. It's right. We celebrate with food. I think every culture celebrates with food at some level. And so there's a lot of stuff, meaning that gets attached to food that we then internalize as part of our identity. Absolutely. And so being able to say, well, when I'm here, I kind of have these things, but what is it that I'm always going to be? And when I work with people, I always talk about what are your intentions? What are your values? And let's start from there to come up with the goals. Let's not have the goals drive the intention.
Yeah. Now you were telling me that you were, you owned a gym, I guess. Yeah. You called a gym, health club. I was trying to think of health club, but yeah. And you did that for 15 years. So did you always work with one-on-one people, or did you become more of like the business owner who you kind of like did the business owner stuff and got more like, how did you get into that field? Let's go all the way back there.
So when I was, 6 years old, I said, Mom, I want to be a paleontologist. And she said to me, nice hobby, can't make enough money. I think maybe all 5 and 6 year olds like dinosaurs. Right.
Yeah.
And then when I was 7, I wanted to be a teacher because I really liked my second grade teacher, Miss Crawl. Mom said, too many women, noble profession, but too many women can't make enough money. And so clearly financial security and stability was important to Mom. And then when I was in third grade, I said, Mom, I want to be an OBGYN. And she said, great, you want to be a doctor. Yeah. So I actually, the interest in health was definitely always there, health and wellness. I ended up in high tech though. And at one point working at Yahoo, I was in the wrong job. I had gained 15 pounds in 6 months eating chocolate covered raisins. So if we want to talk about emotional eating and eating to, cause you're doing stuff you don't want to be doing, or cause you're bored, I can raise my hand. I've done that. Been there, done that.
You know what my corporate food snack was?
What?
Peanut butter pretzels.
Oh, okay.
You know those pretzels that they sell in the big thing? I would buy those and bring those to work to share them. And like, who ate them? Me.
Yeah. The sharing part. I would buy them like in the Yahoo cafeteria. They would sell them. And I would be like, oh, I'm going to buy this pack and share it with everyone. And I did. I just ate more than
you could have one.
Exactly. So, and I ended up hiring a personal trainer when I worked at Yahoo. And through that process of really getting healthier and more fit, I was coming up on my 40th birthday then. And it was this, what am I doing? And what would I rather be doing? And that's when I left high tech and decided I wanted to be part of the solution. So this is when baby boomers were, I think it was like 10,000 per day that were turning 50. And what happens when you're sedentary and you're overweight and all the chronic illnesses that come up as a result of that. And I'm like, I can put my time and energy into helping people be healthier. So I see being healthy as kind of creating the conditions that allow us to then do the things that we want to do in life. It's a quality of life conversation. Mm. And when you're feeling good, you have energy, your body is strong, you've got good balance, you don't worry about falling, all that kind of stuff. That's what I care about, is how many of my clients, I would ask them, well, why is this important to you? And they're like, I want to be able to play with my grandkids. I want to be able to get up and down. I'm retired. I want to be able to travel and go on the excursions and not be sitting on the sidelines. And I'm like, okay, let's do that. Let's figure out a program that will get you there. And so that became why I wanted to, I became a health club owner, is because it was.
So did you get fit and then you were so psyched about it, you wanted to get and be a trainer?
No, I jumped straight from working with a trainer to, I have an MBA. So I think I was not afraid of running a business.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I talk about how I'm definitely on the more impulsive side than my boyfriend is. He's much more deliberate, much more of chess moves, strategic. I've learned a lot from him in terms of approaching things that I think has served me well. But at the same time, I'm the eternal optimist. So I'm like, I'll figure it out. I'm going to jump in.
So how did you, just tell me like what was going on? Because you were working corporate, which I did. I did corporate for so long.
Okay.
But there was a real process that I had to go through that took me literally years. You know, it's just like, and then I say I stumbled into on business ownership because, you know, it was just basically somebody saying, hey, you know, it was network marketing and join us. And I only did it because my daughter needed help and all that thing. And, you know, it was just a long thing where I ultimately did it. And then it kind of lit a fire. And then over time, I was like, oh, I want to do my own thing. I don't want to do this anymore. But it took me a long time to detach from or to feel brave enough or that I was even capable of doing that. Now, you had an MBA, so that I did not have an MBA. But I was a vice president at AOL. And so like, you think that I would have like the moxie, which is what her online club is all about. But yeah, I did not feel, that was hard for me. I could not take that jump for so long. So what was it that made you take that jump to a very different career? Was it an opportunity that presented itself? Okay. Were you driving along and you saw a for sale sign in front of the health club?
Well, at the time I decided I wanted to leave tech. So I started like business for sale online. I don't know. I remember there was some online resources where I went to and I could see what businesses were for sale. And I got myself a broker. And then we started looking for businesses that met the criteria.
That's so interesting. Actually, I did look at franchises. I even flew to Utah and went to, you know, and seriously looked at buying one. And then I engaged with another one where I ended up not making the trip in California, but it was an Australian company. But yeah, so that is, yeah, interesting that you actually did that because there is a little bit of a parallel there with me. But again, I didn't feel like I could do it myself. Like a franchise is kind of like plug and play, right?
Yeah. Well, so actually when I came up with the idea, the legal business name for my business is actually Flow Studios. Not that anybody cares, but Flow from positive psychology, where they talk about being in flow, where it's a state where there's nowhere else you would want to be, where you're up against like what you're capable of, time standstills, athletes call it being in the zone. So that's the name of my business is Flow Studios. There's always like layers to the stuff that I'm working on. I can't help it. And my dad is a small business owner. He's retired now, but he started his own company called Reliable Analysis. My brother ended up taking over after my dad retired. And my brother's now sold it, although I think he's supposed to work until December of 2023. So he has another year where they have him. They don't want the brain drain. But so I think it was through at some level my dad's encouragement.
And the modeling that you saw.
Like you can do this. Yeah. I remember saying I wanted to start from scratch. And he was saying, well, what if you found an existing business that's close enough to what you want to do so that you at least have an installed customer base? And so I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And so I went there. Now, I think Moxie Club, now that I closed the health club, there are things that if I could do, I would obviously do differently. And so Moxie Club is my opportunity to take all that I've learned and now create the business that I want.
So what you're saying is you've now closed your health club and it was very interesting too, because we were talking before I started recording and she said she closed it right before the pandemic. So she had like some sort of intuitive hit that might be a good time to get out of it. But you also talked about doing personal development. You started like hardcore personal development as you were approaching your 50s. And yes. Now you're 50, she says 56. Six? Okay. Six, yeah.
Yeah.
And 53 when you quit your health club or closed down your health club. And then now you're 56. And so you're now creating everything, a digital offering, helping people in the same kind of field that you were helping them with your brick and mortar business, which is great. So tell me about what, because you said you were feeling, I don't know if stagnant is the right word, in your health club ownership career. So what was the personal development that really, because I started doing that too. So I'm curious who inspired you and who you were following. Did you go to any conferences or in-person events?
Yeah. And this was definitely before the pandemic. So as I was coming up on my 50th birthday, I remember, I'm trying to think now, I attended an IDEA Personal Training Institute conference of some sort, and I met a gentleman named Cody Sipe, and he is one of the co-founders of the Functional Aging Institute. So Dan Ritchie and Cody Sipe had that up, and this was all about functional training for boomers, basically, you know, 50 and up, if you will. Then obviously the age keeps changing over time. So I think it's focused on 50 and up though, and how the training needs may or may not be different from someone who's in their 20s or 30s. The idea being that the human body is amazing, right? We can train it to do things. If someone's had a really sedentary life, that doesn't mean it's too late. Absolutely not. It's like 50, we can get you stronger and all kinds of stuff that your body's capable of doing at 50, that just because you weren't doing it at 40 doesn't mean that it didn't have the ability. It just didn't have the training. So working with people to be able to do that, I then ended up into the world of Bedros Koulian, who owns the Fit Body Bootcamp franchise. And I remember being part of his mastermind. I was in the Functional Aging Institute mastermind as well for a little bit. So this was all health club owners, fitness studio owners, that kind of thing. And I really love the coaching aspect, working one-on-one or in small groups with clients. In a health club, that's not who you're attracting, generally speaking. In a health club setting, 90% of the people come in, want to do it themselves. The most assistance they want would be, show me how to operate this treadmill or elliptical, or what's the class schedule look like? Do you have a robust class schedule? And so there's a lot of operations behind that. I know operations backwards and forwards. I was bored that running a health club required that kind of time and energy. Managing staff, managing trainers, managing instructors. I did all of that. I had a staff of over 30. And I'm like, I want to be doing coaching. Coaching is what lights me up. Why am I spending all this time doing this other stuff? And that, so I was doing advertising on Facebook back then, and it was not very noisy at that time. So it was actually quite effective to do Facebook advertising. All the people that came in when they sat around and introduced themselves to each other, it's like, oh, how did you find the club? Oh, through Facebook. I saw Amy's ad. So that's a long story. So I think basically the idea is that I enjoyed coaching and the health club wasn't really giving me that opportunity. I had to create the opportunity, but it was, you know, like, well, why not put all my energy then into coaching and developing coaching clients as opposed to running and operating a health club? And so that's where it became like 3 years where I recognized, oh, I'm not serving as many of the people as I want to. And if I go online and my tech background, I wasn't afraid of tech. And so my tech background allowed me to then say, okay, I'm going to let go of this, so that I have the time and the energy to focus on what I really want to do. and attract the people who want coaching, who, you know, because if you don't want the coaching, I'm not going to force it upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so that's where it came from. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So you wanted to turn what you were doing in terms of helping people into a coaching business, but also under the forming new habits and being healthier. That was, yes. You were still very passionate about that field and that line of work. And you're very knowledgeable in that area as well. So how'd you come up with this idea of the Moxie Club, and tell me what that means to you?
Oh, well, I remember when I was working at Arthur Anderson. So before tech and before my MBA, I was working at Arthur Anderson, and the partner there, Lou Drapeau, I remember him looking at me and saying, "You have the moxie to be a manager." And I didn't know what moxie meant at the time. I had to go look it up. And, you know, it's about the know-how at some level. I think chutzpah is kind of related to it. It's there's a little grit and gumption in there, the sort of that you dare to do those. And so do those things. And so, yeah, moxie is a really strong word to me. It says, yeah, and there's confidence in there too, mixed in. And so, you know, the women that I work with, the women entrepreneurs in STEM, you got to have some moxie to do those kinds of things. I think it requires moxie to live the life you want. If you want to create something with intention, there's risk there, because you at some level are say, putting a stake in the ground and saying, this is what I want. And just doing that, I think a lot of people hide from that. It's almost kind of like the fear of failure, where if I say it out loud and it doesn't happen, what does that mean about me? I'm like, doesn't mean it. It means that you were willing to put something out there, and now we have an opportunity to learn. So I think that's powerful to recognize, to think of it that way.
Do you think people are born with moxie and they just, some people don't apply it or use it? Because sometimes I think people think she has moxie and I just don't have moxie. Do you think that it for some people, it just is there, and some people it's never available?
I don't think so. I mean, I think there's a lot of nature nurture. I certainly think it could be, like, we're all, I think, born with curiosity. And depending on how people respond to your curiosity, we can either tamp it down or we can encourage it. I think moxie has that same kind of thing. Yeah. Does everybody have that? I certainly think far more people have it than don't.
You know what came up for me when I asked you that question? It's kind of like a light bulb. What came up for me is that I think you get, to me, a big part, you said grit and gumption, like this determination to not give in or give up. And I think if you have a reason, if there's something like super that drives you, so purpose or a passion that you are really connected to, whatever that may be, whatever that may look like, I think that gives you moxie.
Yeah.
It's like an injection of moxie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what came up for me.
There's a persistence in there because it's important to you and not someone else. I think there's a lot around really deciding what you want for your own life. And I still remember there's a quote by Steve Jobs about life is short. You know, don't live someone else's life. I'm paraphrasing here, but figure out what you want to do, the life that you want. And I think it probably wasn't until I got into my 50s that I really allowed myself, as strange as it is, I think for so long it was more about rebelling against as opposed to coming to terms with what I truly wanted and not have to react to what someone else thought, the expectations, the judgments. It still creeps in, obviously, but I think more often than not, I'm at least sort of aware and questioning it as opposed to just reacting to it.
Yeah. 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 Awareness is key. That's so important. All right. So we are heading into Thanksgiving. So as I'm recording this, it's 2 days away. And so I want to move into the subject of emotional eating. And okay. I know that you have something that you're going to talk about before we close up shop here. But you talk about joyful eating. Yeah. And so I would like you to explain what that means. And since my middle name is Joy, I thought joyful eating, I can really relate to.
Well, behind you, you have that framed picture that says, right. Live your life joyfully.
Yes. Yes. And I must say that Amy told me how to mirror my Zoom recording. So I guess for however long it's been there, which I redecorated about probably 6 months ago, it's been backwards. So nobody's been able to tell what it says, I guess. And my part's been on the wrong side. So now everybody sees how I really look. So joyful. I like the word joyful. It really resonates with me.
Yeah. So when I think about joyful eating, I think about like, what would that, if you thought about what it would mean to be eating joyfully, I think about having a healthy relationship with food as one. I think about feeling really good about and being in my body would be another one. You can think of these in terms of like the outcomes that people are always telling me they want. To be healthy and fit and strong would be another one. And we talked about food as part of a culture. It's to have supportive friends and families. And so that's when I think about how eating fits into a joyful life, that's kind of how I see it. When we talk about like emotional eating and I'm not saying it as an identity. I'm saying it more as a habit, if you will, where it becomes like the go-to for dealing with emotions that you would otherwise like to not have. So when I was bored and I was eating my chocolate-covered raisins, it was to sort of distract myself from something that I didn't want to be doing. Or just like if you binge watch Netflix and you're eating popcorn the whole time. There's a mindless component to it. We're not eating consciously. It's unconscious. And if it's our go-to to cope with things that we don't want in our life or we don't like or we have to deal with the frustration, the drama involved in Thanksgiving, then I think oftentimes it leads to overeating. And so what I want to help people do is actually put into practice things that help to nurture a more joyful eating habit, experience, the kind of life that I think, well, I know my clients want. And so we start with things like, well, what does it mean to nourish your body? So there's some nutrition, basic nutrition that we talk about, but it's also, I talk about habits. What are self-care habits that nourish our body, that nourish our brain? Big part of it. And then I talk about things like trusting your body so that we're not ignoring it. So chronic dieting is focused a lot on ignoring what our body is telling us. You're counting points, you're tracking calories, even at some level macros. Sometimes it's, are you really listening to what your body's telling you? So,
and kind of a form of deprivation even, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot
not joyful
of times, no, and I'm always saying like resistance is futile. And so because our
what
brain,
you resist persists. That's a quote.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so so trust is about listening to our body. It's about, and I mean, if you ignore it, if you keep ignoring it, then it pretty much, instead of paying attention to it, well, it's whispering to us. I always talk about like the hunger scale as an example. Do you eat when you're hungry and do you stop when you're comfortably full? Or is it like you don't eat until you're hangry and you're snapping at people or you have a headache or feeling really low on energy and start getting cold? Or do you like, can you notice when you're on the edges of it, you know, so like the gradations of it? And same thing with fullness. You know, my dad would eat until he had to like undo the buttons on his pants. And Thanksgiving, one day of indulgence is, I'm talking about habits here. Right? So I actually think for Thanksgiving, eat joyfully, enjoy the food. If there are food police in your head telling you you shouldn't be eating this, ignore them. Let's I'm actually going to do an episode called Defunding the Food Police.
Because in reality, you can't gain like a bunch of weight from one meal. I mean, you might have some inflammation that if you weigh, you should never weigh yourself on the next day after Thanksgiving anyways, but you probably have a lot of salt and it's going to like, you're going to retain water. So you're going to weigh more, but like one day is not going to be a big deal. So,
And when we talk about what's important, we talk about values and intentions. I would say, look, if family and friends are something that you consider to be really important, if loving relationships is something that's really important, not to say health isn't, but if on that day you put that in front, I think if sharing foods that maybe you normally don't have, there's maybe some favorite dishes that come out at Thanksgiving that you otherwise would never bother to make or don't know how to make or whatever. Enjoy it. There's no artificial scarcity there. There's true scarcity. Go ahead and enjoy it.
It just goes back to awareness, I think, again, like being aware of what you're doing and making a decision to want to do things differently. You clearly have a desire to do things differently if you are starting to be aware of what you're, so that's the first step, like being aware of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And how you can change that. I am a fast eater. I know I'm a fast eater. And my mother-in-law is super slow. It's a perfect example of the tortoise and the hare. There's nobody that I've ever met who is so slow. She can chew on and she can make no dent in her food. And like 15 minutes later, she's still chewing on the same two bites she started with. Whereas I'm like always first, like I look around and I'm like, I'm embarrassed because everybody else is still eating halfway through their meal. And I'm like, I'm like done. So I think being aware of that is just like very, very good. A first step in maybe taking a little breath between bites, chewing maybe a little bit longer. I have my mother-in-law as an example that I need to follow.
So there's definitely, I mean, what you're describing is like the practice of mindful eating, where you're being a bit more aware of what you're doing, which is definitely part of when I say listen to your body, that can be part of it. Recognizing hunger cues and fullness cues. If the foods that we're eating are nourishing and have enough like fat and protein in them, then we actually experience satiety, that satisfaction that a lot of folks kind of in the dieting world deprive themselves. So it's like never feeling satisfied. Fat is a huge important thing that our brains need actually to get that sensation, if you will, that feeling. So I talk about trust, I talk about nourish, I talk about loving our body. So you hear a lot these days around body positivity or the body neutral approach, that kind of stuff. I think we get how our body looks wrapped up and entangled with our self-worth. And it reminds me of Matt told me like when he retired, how important it was to distinguish between who you are and what you do. I think the same goes for body image. It's like, instead of focusing on that one part of your body that you wish were different and never being happy with it and, not being grateful for what your body's capable of doing for you and cherishing and appreciating what it can do. And instead beating yourself up. And I still remember one of my clients when she first started working with me talked about how she was disgusted with her body when she looked in the mirror. That was the word she used. I'm like, this is what you're telling yourself all day long. Every morning when you look in the mirror, that's the first thing you're saying to yourself. Do you recognize like how demotivating that might be if that's what you're saying to yourself? And so, I think emotional eating gets caught up a lot in how we are processing stress a lot of times or things we don't want. So boredom, any negative emotion, if you will, and to some extent, positive emotions too. But I think it's the negative ones that really get us in trouble. And so
I really loved, I just want to address the analogy used that your brother used, because I think, you know, like you are not your title.
Yeah.
And you are not your, you know, broken nose or, you know, whatever. I had big ears. You are not your big ears. I think that's such a great message.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not my brother. That's Matt.
Oh, Matt.
My boyfriend.
Oh,
my
your boyfriend. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay.
I thought you were talking about your brother earlier. And sorry.
That's okay.
So, and the other thing that I thought of is that I have this book called Simple Abundance, and she has this part, a section about like loving yourself. And one exercise she suggests you do is that you look in the mirror and you find and write down 10 things that you like about yourself when looking in the mirror. And I thought, wow, that's powerful. Some people probably can't have a really hard time with 10. And she said, if you can't find 10 today, then find whatever you can find and come back and do it again tomorrow. And that just has such a great, message there to focus on the right things, not the wrong things.
Yeah. Well, focus on the positive. So we do have a negativity bias and a confirmation bias, mm-hmm. which are, you know, I think our brains adapted to our environment that keeps us safe. And so I'm all for working with our brain and our body. And mm-hmm. so I'm always like, well, let's provide our brain with evidence. So you talk about like the looking in the mirror and focusing instead of on the negative to make a decision, a conscious decision to focus on the positive as opposed to the default, which is kind of where our brain wants to go.
I think,
to keep us safe. It's to focus on the negative. Because if we were, you know, in the wild and we saw a rock and we thought it was a bear, we'd be okay. But if we saw a bear and it was actually, and we thought it was a rock, we might not get to reproduce, right? If we mistook the bear for a rock. Yeah. So I think there is that negativity bias in that we need to be aware of so that we can take steps to counter it in that sense.
So
there's four practices that I talk about in joyful eating. It's trust, nourish, love, and gratitude. Mm. And so what happens in emotional eating is some part of those four we don't have in place. And so I'm offering a masterclass. I'm jumping ahead, I guess.
No, that's good, because we got to wrap up and I was going to go there. So you're just doing it for me.
So December 1st. So I think at the time this podcast is available.
When it airs, it'll be a couple days after. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to be talking about how to stop emotional eating. And there's no willpower and no deprivation required. I'm going to teach some stuff that's really around mastering our triggers. And when you talk about a habit, a trigger is what gets the ball rolling. So if we can master that, just imagine all the different things we can do. It's not just about not doing stuff. It's also about being able to do things we want.
Yeah, that's great. And so just go to your website to
go to my website.
More info.
And yeah, I've got
moxie-club.com.
Correct.
And it's Moxie is M-O-X-I-E. And there's a little hyphen in there before club. So that's great. And before we go, I just have one more question.
Okay.
What is your mantra?
My mantra is making your choices when you're in a state of abundance is where the magic happens.
Hmm. That's so great. I love leaving with that.
Yeah. So self-care habits will help you stay in that state of abundance too.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. She's going to, you have a podcast too. So we should mention that.
Yeah. Happy and Healthy with Amy Lang.
Happy and Healthy with Amy Lang. Yeah. You like the same things I do. Same words. You use the same words I do. So we're soul sisters. All right. Yes. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Living Your Spark Second Half podcast. If you'd like to watch my guest interviews, you can find the video version of this podcast on my Not Your Average Grandma YouTube channel. Also, you can check out what I have going on at the moment by going to my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com or find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you like this episode, please mention it to a friend and don't forget to leave a review so I know the topics you like best and can bring you more of that content in upcoming episodes. Last but not least, remember to always listen to that inner voice that will never steer you wrong and make living from the most sparked place possible your biggest priority. When we do that, we make the world a better place.